Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Pesachim Lamed Daled. We are in Lamed Gimel Amud Beis. We're starting with the word gufa, about 8 lines from the bottom of the Amud. We got off on a tangent yesterday. We're in the second parak here in Pesachim. And although the vast majority of this parak has been dedicated to the topic of Yisuri Ana as it relates to the Isra of Chametz on Pesach, so the Gemara went off on a little bit of a tangent. The tangent was really prompted by a Mishnah. On Lamed Alpha Mudbeis, the Mishnah talked about eating Trumas Chametz on Pesach. And so you have a confluence of Isurim where you're eating not only Chametz on Pesach, but it's also Truma as well, and you're not a Kohen. So we got on to the discussion regarding a non-Kohen eating Truma on Pesach. So the Gemara spent some time talking about the Isur of Izar eating Truma. That has been the discussion, and the Gemara then went off even on a further tangent. On Lama Gimel Amud Beis, yesterday's daf, the Gemara had a discussion, a debate between Rav Yochanan and Rav Chista in terms of how to view the liquid, the juice that's inside of a fruit. Is it considered like the juice is compartmentalized in the fruit itself, that's Mifkat Pekideh, or do we consider the juice inside to be part and parcel of the fruit, Mivla Bli? What difference does it make? It makes a difference in terms of Tum and Tahara. And so this is where the Gemara discussed yesterday. So for a good part of today, in fact, all of today, so the Gemara is going to be speaking a little bit more about Truma, Truma Tameya. We're going to talk a little bit more about Tum and Tahara. So, okay, so for one more day, we're going to be in this tangent. Tomorrow, Amir Tzashem, when we start with the Mishnah, truth of the matter is I'm going to leave us off a little bit before the Mishnah, but tomorrow when we start with the Mishnah, we come back to Inyanim of Pesach. Tomorrow, actually, the Mishnah on Lamed Hay is going to be a very basic Mishnah regarding which grains one could use in order to make matzah. Okay, so we come back to some basic Pesach issues tomorrow's daf. In the meantime, today, we are going to continue in our tangent. As we already mentioned, the Gemara yesterday had a discussion, a debate between Rav Yochanan and Rav Chista in terms of the nature of the juice inside of a fruit. Along that discussion, so the Gemara went off also on another tangent regarding whether or not one can go ahead and use bread or oil that of truma that becomes tameh, and can one use it as fuel? And the Gemara says, yes, you can, and we're going to come back to this point, and so let's begin. Gufa, we are about 7 lines from the bottom of the Amud. Gufa malikim bepasav v'shemesh al truma shenitmeis. So the Braisa over here describes that you're allowed to use bread and oil of truma that becomes tummy. Now, as I mentioned this yesterday, bread as a fuel, I don't fully understand it. Doesn't seem like it would serve as such a functional fuel. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But the point is that when you have any kind of truma, in this case we're talking about either bread or oil, and it becomes tamei, so obviously a kohen cannot eat it. But what a kohen is allowed to do is a kohen is allowed to get benefit from it while burning it. And so the Braisa says, we saw it yesterday, the Gemara is reviewing it, and that is that once you have this bread, once you have this oil, and it's tamei, and I'm sorry, and it's truma, and it's tamei, so you're allowed to burn it. So on that, the Gemara now is going to have a small discussion. So this is both said in the name of Abai and in the name of Rava. Am Rav Huna, and all this is attributed back to the sheet of Rav Huna. So this allowance to go ahead and to burn truma bread is specific only to bread, but not to the not to kernels of wheat. Meaning, if I have kernels of wheat of truma that becomes tameh, I cannot use that for fuel. Now, why not? Meaning, if it's tameh and truma tameh is allowed to be burnt, so why can't I use it as a fuel? So the Gemara says, Shamayavo Bamli De Takala, because Rav Huna is of the position that the Chachamim were worried. You see, when you have these wheat kernels and you go ahead and you use it as fuels, what may end up happening is the following. So you're roasting them, meaning you're actually going to be using them as fuel, but right now, before we get to the point where it's going to be burnt, so you're roasting them. Now, when it comes to bread, so what do you do with roasted bread? Nothing. In other words, it's not that exciting. But when it comes to roasted kernels, so toasted kernels were something that was enjoyable back then. Even now, well, many of our cereals are toasted kernels. So anyway, so the problem is, according to Rav Huna, is that if we throw the truma tamea wheat kernels into the fire, so what may end up happening is that somebody may say, hey, look, it looks delicious, and absentmindedly may come and pick it up and come to eat it. So this is the concern of Shema Yavo Bahem Lidei Takala. So it might lead to this unintended accident. So Rav Yochanan Amar, and Rav Yochanan on the other side of this issue says, no, afilu chita. So even if it's wheat kernels, if it's truma tamea wheat kernels, so you can throw it into the fire and use it as fuel. The Amay Nechush Dama Asib Emli Dei Takala, the Gemara says, now, isn't Rav Yochanan concerned about what the same thing Rav Huna is concerned with? Meaning Rav Huna obviously has this issue of it'll lead to Takala. If I put the kernels in the fire, so you may just pick it out as it's toasted and absentmindedly eat the truma tamea, which of course you're not allowed to do. And why isn't Rav Yochanan worried about that? So Kedama Rav Ashi, so the Gemara explains, in explanation of Rav Yochanan, as we are now on the top of Lam Dalet Amud Aleph, Bishlikasu Mi'isasa, Hachaname Bishlikasu Mi'isasa. So the Gemara says, well, we're going to see a Rav Ashi in another context talking about boiling something and making it disgusting, rendering it disgusting. So over here, Rav Yochanan's allowance to use the wheat kernels as a fuel is only talking about in a case where you boiled it and made it disgusting. So once you render something unfit, so then we're not worried about takala. That's the yisod of Rav Ashi. And the Gemara says that Rav Yochanan would use that yisod. Obviously, Rav Ashi comes well after Rav Yochanan, but the point is Rav Yochanan will use that yisod of Rav Ashi in order to explain our halacha over here. Now, v'hecha d'itmar Rav Ashi, and where did Rav Ashi make this point? So, ahad amar Rav Avin bar Rav Acha amar Rav Yitzhak abashol gaval shobeis Rabbi Haya. So the Gemara said, it went on the following scenario. We know that Abishol was the kneader with a K, he was the kneader of Beis Rebbe. So for Rebbe, so he had his dough prepared, and he didn't have Stam, just a regular kneader, but he also had a kneader / Talmud Chacham, who was kneading the dough for him, and that Talmud Chacham was Abishol. Now, v'hayu mechamim lo chamim b'chitin shol truma tamea, lalosh mehem isa b'tahara. So the Gemara says now over here in this episode, so the water that would get boiled, what would be the fuel that would be used to boil that water? They would use the chitim, the wheat of truma tamea, in order to boil them, in order to boil the water. Now, and the water was going to be boiled batara, meaning that the to bake the bread. So the bread had to have been baked in a state of tahara, and despite the fact that the fuel that was used was truma tamea wheat kernel. So basically what we described earlier. But this is episodic now. This is actual a maisa shahaya. So amai nechush demasi behuli de takala. So the Gemara says now, taking the wheat kernels and throwing them onto the fire and using them as fuel for the fire. So again, the Gemara is going over the same point, which is, aren't we worried about when you throw these truma tamea wheat kernels into the fire? So once they get toasted, isn't someone by accident going to come and take it and eat it? And you're not allowed to. It's truma tamea. So Rav Ashi, in explanation of this point, says again what we said earlier. But this is it. This is a source in which Rav Ashi made his original point, which is that what you're going to do is that you're going to render the wheat kernels unfit. And you do that by boiling them, and you render them unfit. And once you do that, so then we're not worried about takala anymore. Okay, Adkan takes us to the end of that section. An important discussion over here. I'll do a short version of the discussion, but an important discussion over here is as follows. Rebbe would make sure that Abishol would be the kneader of his dough in order to ensure that any of the bread that Rebbe would be eating would be in a state of tahara. Now, there are a couple points to consider over here. First of all, the bread be in a state of tahara. Rebbe's not a kohen, so why does Rebbe have to eat in a state of tahara? So Rashi points out over here. You take a look at the Rashi inside. Rashi makes over here a secondary minor point, which is of all the fuels to use in the Beis Rebbe. So why did they use truma tamea? Meaning, why not just simply get regular fuel to use in order to burn the fire? And specifically, they went out of the way to get truma tamea to use as fuel. So Rashi says, yeah, because it happened to have been very cheap, right? Shayu lochim osam mikohanim bezol. So it happens to be that truma tamea, the kohen doesn't have much need for it. He can't eat it. And even though, yes, it's true, the kohen himself can use it for fuel, but it's not that good for the kohen. So he would sell it on the cheap. Now, right? I don't want to overstate this point, but we know that Rebbe was extraordinarily wealthy. We know that Rebbe historically was one of the wealthiest individuals. And so the idea that he looked for a bargain in terms of buying the fuel, okay, so speaks about the idea of being frugal and even if you have the money, not to waste the money. But okay, neither here nor there. Anyway, but the but Rebbe was not a Kohen, so what was he doing eating his food in the state of Tahara? So the next Rashi, Lalush ben Misa b'Tahara, Rashi writes, Klamar, Alfa Pisha Rebbe Ochel Chulin b'Tahara Haya. So Rashi writes, so you have to say this. In other words, Rebbe was Ochel Chulin b'Tahara. So he, even though he wasn't eating Truma, he was only eating Chulin, but still Rebbe took upon himself a stringency that he would only eat all of his foods in the state of Tahara. Okay, so it's a personal Chumra of Rebbe. And Lo Chayish Doma Nagu Hanichitim Temeim, Beisa de batlalu mitaras ochel v'lo mitame. Now the now over here, what they're not going to be concerned with, meaning what was the fuel that was being used? The fuel that was being used was this truma tamea, and there was no concern that the truma tamea would be touching the actual bread that was going to be prepared for Rebbe. Okay, and that's why you needed a talmid chacham like Abishol to go ahead and to ensure that you're using fuel which is made up of truma tamea, and yet the actual bread that's being baked is not going to come into contact with it, and therefore Rebbe can continue his personal chumra of eating chulin in a state of tahara. Okay, truth be told is that there are other issues over here in terms of burning truma tamea for non kohanim. Okay, a second Tosfos over here discusses it in more detail, but anyway, we're going to continue in the Gemara. We're on Lamed Aleph Medalf. We're about a quarter of the way down. We're starting the first words in the line is Abaye Bar Avin and Rav Chanina Bar Avin, and for the remainder of today's daf, really what we're going to be focusing on is one Mishnah in Trumos, and the Gemara is going to offer three explanations of how to understand this Mishnah in Trumos, and that will be really the entirety of today's daf. And again, you can ask yourself, well, what does this have anything to do with Pesachim and why is it here? So again, the Gemara now is using our opportunity, meaning the Mishnah a couple days ago talked about eating chametz, which also was truma, on Pesach. And so once we're talking about truma, so it gives the Talmud Bavli an opportunity to speak a little bit about the Mishnayos and Trumos. There is no Talmud Bavli on the Mishnayos and Trumos. So this is just simply an opportunity for the Bavli to explore one particular Mishnah. So here in the ninth parak, well, the Gemara is going to give us a quick introduction, but in the ninth parak of Masechta Trumos, so there's a Mishnah that's going to be really difficult, and the Gemara is going to try to wrap its head around how to understand that Mishnah in Trumos. So, but we start off with a small prelude. Abai bar Avin, Rav Chanina bar Avin, Tanu, Trumos, Bei Rabba. So you have these Amorayim who were learning the Masechta of Trumos, and they were learning in the Yeshiva Rabba, which it begs the question. I'll ask the question. I don't have an answer. Clearly, the Amoraim above were learning Masechtos and Seder Zrayim, right? We have it right over here in our Gemara. They were learning Masechtos Zrayim. And so why isn't there Bavli and Masechtos Zrayim? Okay, so I know it's in Bavli and not in Eretz Yisrael, and it's not Halacha Lamaisa, but the answer is an incomplete answer, because the Amoraim spent all the time writing on Masechta Kachim, and for Masechta Kachim, for almost every Masechta in Seder Kachim, so we have Talmud Bavli. Okay, and it was not Lach Lamaisa, it was post Chorban, it was there, they were writing it outside of Eretz Yisrael, and so they wrote in Seder Kachim. So why didn't they also write in Seder Zrayim as well? Okay, obviously there is a reason why, but, and I myself may be able to formulate a couple suggestions, but the question is really strong. Anyway, so Pagabu Rava Bar Masna, so they meet Rava Bar Masna, Amar Lahu, so he says to them, my Amrisa B'Trumos de Bey Mar. So what did you learn in the yeshiva, right? So Bey Mar, Mar always is a reference when from the context of Abai and Rava, so Mar is always a reference to Rava, so good, so you're learning in Rava's yeshiva, and you were learning Masechta Trumos, so please, enlighten. Like, what did you learn about Masechta Truma? So Amrle, so they just turned the question around, and they said, my kashlach. So he says, I'll tell you what, better yet, clearly you have some sort of agenda. I don't mean that in a bad way. But clearly you have something particular that's bothering you, and why don't you share with us what's bothering you, And if we can, we're going to elucidate. So Amar Lehu, so he says to them, yeah, you know what, there is a Mishnah in Trumos that really bothers me, and that's the following. So now we're going to the following Mishnah. So this is the ninth parak of Trumos, and this Mishnah over here will be the remainder of today's daf. We're going to be focusing on this one Mishnah. Shesile Trumos shenitmu v'shaslan to'arim melatamei v'asurin melechol. So let's say you have seeds of Truma that becomes Tamei, meaning they're edible seeds, and they become Tamei, and what you do is you put them back into the ground, you plant them into the ground, and now they're going to regrow. So Tahorim Milatamei. So the fact that they were Tamei, so the new growth is Tahor, right? It's planting and replanting them, and regrowth now, what you're, it's right, to borrow an expression, it's born again. And it's a totally new entity, and so therefore it's tamei. I'm sorry. Therefore it's tahor. However, asurin melechol. However, the Mishnah says, but you can't eat it. Now the you over here is not clear in the Mishnah. Who's the you? Who's the Mishnah addressing? Mishnah is addressing Kohanim. Mishnah is addressing the Yisrael. So that part's not clear. Okay. So what we have over here is this Mishnah in Trumas ninth parak, Mishnah Zion. So the Mishnah says that if I take my truma that becomes tamei, but it's a bulb, it's a seed, and I put it back into the ground, and it regrows. So that which grows now is tahor. However, it is inedible halachically, right? It's usr. No one's allowed to eat it. Now that requires an explanation, and the Gemara over here articulates the question: v'chime acher de tahor melatamei amai sur melechol. How could it possibly be that when it was truma tamei, so you can't eat it? I understand, that's the halacha. But now you plant it in the ground, now it regrew, and now it's tahor, so why can't you eat it? And again, the clarification needs to come in terms of who the you is. But why can't you eat it? Why does the Mishnah say it's asur b'achila? That's very difficult. So amru lehachi, amaraba. Okay, so the amaraim of Abaye and Rav Chanina, who were learning in the yeshiva of Rabba, so they knew this Mishnah, and they knew what was the pshat that was offered by Rabba. So here we go now, approach number one. Over the course of today's daf, we're going to see three approaches to this question. And so now this is the first of three approaches in terms of how to understand this. This is now going to be what was taught in the yeshiva of Rabba. Ma'asur masurim lazarim. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah means that who can't eat it? Zarim can't eat it. That's the pshat in the Mishnah. Now, basically, here's what we're saying. Okay, and it's an important understanding of the basic ideas that is guiding this discussion. When you take something you plant in the ground and it grows again, so as we pointed out, it's totally new growth. Meaning, halachically, it really is disconnected to whatever the seed once was. Now the truth is that in a moment we are going to make a distinction in terms of talking about seeds that act like a bulb, where the new growth is coming off the seeds, but the seed is still intact. Or we're going to be talking about a seed that totally decomposes, and the new growth is really a totally new entity. So we will make that distinction in just a moment. But the basic idea is that any of the new growth is really a new entity. So if I take truma and I put it into the ground and it grows again, if it's truma tamea, so what grows now is truma tahora. Right, which is clearly the what we just learned together in that Mishnah, in the previous Mishnah. Why not? Let's ask a simple question. If the growth is totally new, how about instead of it being Truma Tahora that grows from the ground, why not just simply say it's perfectly Chulin, which grows from the ground? Or if you want to say it more accurately, it's Tevel that grows from the ground. Or something that's going to become Tevel. So why don't we say it that way? So here's what we're going to have to say. Rashi says this, and Tosfos also makes this point as well. And then here's what we're going to have to say: that really the truth of the matter is that when I plant something in the ground and it grows again, so that new growth is a total new entity. However, here's what the Chachamim were concerned about: if you were to allow the halacha to exist as we just described, I put something in the ground and it grows again, and what I have now is totally new entity. So anytime you have truma tamea in a seed version, so now the solution is really simple. Put it into the ground and let it grow again. And now you basically renewed it. Let's say you're a Yisrael and you have Truma Tamea. Oh, so this is fantastic. Put it in the ground, let it grow again, and you're going to renew it. So what the Chachamim did is the Chachamim said, look, even though Me'ikar Hadin, that's right, nevertheless, we're going to legislate over here and insert basically a gzeira. We don't want to incentivize people to take the Truma Tameh and put it into the ground. And so therefore, even though Me'ikar Hadin, what comes out now, is really chulin, it's tevel, which can become chulin, but we don't want to incentivize people to do so. So therefore, what the Chachamim now legislated and said is that when you take Truma Tameh, plant it in the ground, what comes out now is Truma Tahora. Now, even though you could have made the argument that maybe they should legislate and say that that which comes out of the ground is also going to be Truma Tameh, but to that degree, they didn't go. They didn't go so far, meaning that they did allow the Tuma to go away. Now, they didn't allow it, meaning that actually happens, but but they still insisted that that which grows from the ground is going to be Truma and not non-Truma. Why did the Chachamim do that? Because again, they didn't want to incentivize everyone to start taking their Truma Tameh and simply put it into the ground. Okay, so with all that stated, I know that was a lengthy introduction, but with all that stated, so now we understand that the pshat in the Mishnah in Trumos is that when you take your Truma Tameh and you plant it in the ground and what comes out again now is Tahor and it's Aser Ba'achila. What it means is a Yisrael can't eat it, a Zar can't eat it, but a Kohen can eat it. So Umay Kamashmalan, so the Gemara says, good. So you know what the Chiddush is now, we're saying, Gidule Truma Truma. The growth of Truma is Truma. When I take Truma seeds and I put them into the ground, and it grows again, so what comes out is Truma. So the Gemara says, that's the Pshat in the Mishnah in Truma. So the Gemara says, the only problem I have with that Pshat is that we knew that already, Tanina, that is already another Mishnah in Truma. It happens to be in the same Perek, ninth Perek of Trumos, Gidule Truma Truma. That if I take truma, I put it in the ground and I allow it to grow, meaning the original truma was some form of a seed, and I put it into the ground and it grows again. So what comes out from the ground now is truma. So we know this already. So the Gemara says, well, maybe over here we're talking about not just the growth, but the growth of the growth. Okay, so in other words, we're talking now about derivatives. So you took your seed, you put it into the ground, and you had growth coming out from that seed, and you had growth coming out from that growth. And maybe that's the Chiddush, and we're talking specifically about Ein Zaro Kala, where the seed itself does not disintegrate. It's like a bulb, where you put into the ground, and now you have growth coming out, and you have growth from the growth coming out. So the Gemara says, Hanami Tanina. That also is a Mishnah, also in the ninth paragraph of Trumos, HaTevel Gidula Mutarim B'Davish Zaro Kala. So if you take tevel and you plant it into the ground, so the growth is going to be mutter. Tevel is aser. Tevel is untithed produce. So it's aser, but when you put it into the ground and what comes out now is new growth, so what comes out now of the ground is going to be mutter, meaning it doesn't have the status of tevel, but that's only when the seed disintegrates. But if the seed doesn't disintegrate like a bulb, so afila gidula gidula asur b'achila. So that which comes out of the ground now is going to be asur b'achila, meaning it's still going to have the status of being tevel. So what comes out now is that you want to say a pshat in the Mishnah in Trumos, right? In the ninth paragraph, that seventh Mishnah of shisile Trumos shenitmu v'shaslam taharim l'tame v'asur melechol. So you're telling me that the pshat in that Mishnah is that a kohen is allowed to eat that truma, meaning what went into the ground is truma tameya. What comes out of the ground, the new growth, is now going to be truma tahor, and a kohen can eat it. So the Gemara says, when all said and done, you're saying a pshat in the Mishnah, which happens to be correct, but it's not teaching me anything new. Meaning we already have other Mishnayos in that very same parak, in the ninth parak, that made this point. And it's hard to imagine that all the Mishnah is doing over here is telling me the halachas of gidule truma truma. We knew that already. We already have a Mishnah teaching me, so that's hard to imagine that that's really what the Mishnah is coming to teach me. Ishtik, ishtiku. Okay, so these Amoraim, even though they learned in the Yeshiva Rabbah, and the Yeshiva Rabbah, that's the pshat they were saying, v'shem Rabbah, but they really didn't have a response to that criticism. So Amalei midishmiya lebaha. So they said to him, okay, what did you hear about the Mishnah? So Amalu hachiyam Rav Sheshes. So he says, okay, this is what I heard v'shem Rav Sheshes. And now this is going to be our second pshat of that Mishnah in Trumos. My Asurin. Let's set the question up again. Question is, the Mishnah in Trumos writes, right? It's about 10 lines from where we are up in the Gemara, that if I have Shesile Trumos Shenitma'u, So I have the seeds of truma that becomes tamei, so it's truma tamei, and shaslan, and I plant them in the ground, and they grow. It's tahorin melatamei. So the truma goes away. It's panim chadashos, but asur melechol, but you can't eat it. And so the question begs: if it's panim chadashos, so why can't you eat it? Why can't you eat it? So amar of sheshes ma'aser masur lekohanim hov ifsilu luhu be'ezachadas. Okay, so Rav Shesha says, really what we're going to do is offer now a new pshat, and that is the following. Is that when we say that you cannot eat it, the you over here is a reference to the Kohanim. Kohanim are not allowed to eat it. And why are they not allowed to eat it? Because they become disqualified. And how do they become disqualified? Through a principle known as Hesachadas. Rashi writes over here, Hesachadas, Kishenitmu mitchila, when they originally become Tameh, says Rashi, he siach daito mehem, meaning what the Kohen now has done is that he's taken his mind off of the truma. Now over here, in terms of being mindful of the truma, Rashi writes, shuv l'shomim v'nifsalim be'esach hadas techsiv gabi trumas es mishmeres trumas sai avlu shimer v'lo tasiach daitcha. So the shimer requirement that we speak about constantly and frequently regarding trumas, so that means to say that the Kohen has to safeguard it. It doesn't simply mean that the Kohen has to protect it, although it does mean that. And it doesn't simply mean that the Kohen has to ensure that the truma doesn't become tamei, although it means that as well. But in addition to all that, what it means is that the Kohen has to have his mind on it at all times. Now, this is a little bit difficult to quantify. What does it mean that you have to have your mind on it at all times? Meaning clearly, in terms of keeping our attention. So, right, especially nowadays, but even in the good old days, keeping our attention on one thing at all times, that's very difficult. You have a life to live. You have other things that are that you're preoccupied with. So what it must mean is that you have to have it somewhere, not in the front of your mind, but in the back of your mind. But there has to be some sense that you are that you're mindful of it. If there is anything that clearly removes your mindset from it, so now you've approached in this area called Hesachadas. Now, practically speaking, what does that mean? So we'll give an example of the Gemara right here. Meaning once the Truma becomes Tameh, the Kohen basically says, okay, it's over. Meaning I can't eat it because it's Tameh. So if somehow there's a way to remove Truma, right? And you think about it, how do you remove Truma from food? You can't tovel in the mikvah. Okay, but if somehow the tumah is removed, so the fact that you now have removed your mind from it, that's called hesachadas. So at that point in time now, it becomes disqualified. That's the pshat in the Mishnah and Trumos. Because it's tameh and you're a mesiach das, so therefore it has now gone through this psul of hesachadas. Okay, and the Gemara now is going to take a couple of lines to have a really lumdish discussion regarding Hesachadas and how to understand this disqualification of Hesachadas. The Gemara says, Hanich lamandamer, Hesachadas pasal haguf have shapir. Elamandar Hesachadas pasal tuma have maik lamemar. So the Gemara says, well, how did you understand Hesachadas? Is it a psul haguf or is it what the Gemara describes as a psul tuma? What's the difference between psul haguf and psul tuma? So I'm going to explain it in just a moment, but first let's see the machlokis. Did my Hesachadas? How do you understand the psul of Hesachadas? Rav Yochanan amar psul tuma have. So Rav Yochanan describes it as psul tuma, and Rav Shimon Malakish amar psul haguf have. And Rav Shimon Malakish says it's a psul haguf. Now Rav Yochanan amar psul tuma have she'im yavo Eliyahu v'yitarenu shomim lo. Rav Yochanan will tell you that it's a psul tuma, meaning when you are mesiach das, what's the problem with being mesiach das? So Rav Yochanan understands it really simply. Once you're distracted from it, once you turned your attention away from it, it could have become Tameh. You don't know. The psul of Hesachadas, according to Rav Yochanan, is that now it entered into a world of Suffolk. It may have become Tameh. Let's say, for example, Aliyah were to come and tell us, look, we know you were distracted. You turned your attention away from it. But Aliyah Onavi says, look, but I know no Tum occurred to it. So under those circumstances, it would be tahor. On the other hand, Reb Shimon Malakish Amar Pasul Guf Havishim Yavo Liav Yitarenu Ein Shomim Lo. But according to Reish Lakish, Hesachadas is not an absence of attention, although it is, but it's not an absence of attention, and therefore it may have become Tameh. No, according to Reish Lakish, Hesachadas is that because you turned your attention away from it, that in of itself creates a psul in the truma. Hesachadas is what's called a psul haguf. The item becomes psul through hesachadas. It's a psul in of itself. This in the world of lamdus is what we classically described as chefta versus gavra. Meaning what Reish Lakish is arguing over here is that the hesachadas psul is the psul in the item itself. That actually creates a disqualification in the item. Rav Yochanan is telling you, no, the item itself, I don't know. The hesach hadas problem is a function of the virtue of the fact that because you weren't watching it, it may have become tameh. It's not a psul in of itself. It's just that your lack of attention may have put it in a compromised position where it may have become tameh, but it's not a disqualification in of itself. Good. So this is machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So now, in our second pshat that we're offering in that Mishnah and Trumos, where I have the Shasile Truma that becomes tum and I plant in the ground, and it grows up from the ground, and it's tar, but the Kohanim can't eat it. So how do you understand it? Why can't the Kohanim eat it? So it can't eat it because of Hesach Hadas. But the Gemara points out that works really well for Reish Lakish, who holds that's the Psula Gof. But for Rav Yochanan, it doesn't work out as well. Okay. And it's simply an observation that the pshat over here is limited only to the shita of Reish Lakish, not Rav Yochanan. Now, in this debate between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in terms of Hesach Hadas, whether it's a psul aguf or whether it's just a lack of attention, therefore possible tumah, so the Gemara discusses this a little bit more, Eisvei Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So Rav Yochanan challenges Reish Lakish. Again, Reish Lakish says that Hesach Hadas is a psul aguf. So let's consider over here a brisa, it's a Tosefta in Zvachim. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osho, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, Omer Lul Katan Hayu Abin Kevish Lemizbeach, Ben Ma'arava Shal Kevish Shesham Hayu Zorkim Psul Lechatas Ha'ov, V'tubar Tzirasam V'yotzen Lebeis HaSreifa. So in terms of the construction of the Mizbeach, you had a ramp going up to the Mizbeach, and there was a small gap that existed between the ramp and the Mizbeach. When you got the ramp, obviously allowed you ascent to the top of the Mizbeach, and there existed just a small gap in between them. And what they would do is that if you had a chatas ha'of that becomes disqualified, so they would do is that they would deposit the chatas ha'of in this gap area. Obviously, there's enough room in the gap area for the chatas ha'of, for the disqualified chatas ha'of. Allow it to go through what's called ibert surah. Ibert surah just simply means leaving it overnight. So now it becomes disqualified in total through the disqualification of what's called lina. And under those circumstances, now once it's fully disqualified, you can take it out to the Beis HaSreifa and you can burn it in the Beis HaSreifa. And because it's a Chatzos HaOf that becomes disqualified, it must be burnt in the actual Azar itself. But anyway, all this to make one singular point. Iyamar b'shalma pasol toma havei mishum hachi by ibert surah. Shema yavo aliyah v'itarenu. Now, the fact that it becomes disqualified and yet we need to go through, to undergo through the process of ibert surah lina. So for Rav Yochanan says, look, to me it makes perfect sense. Because consider, I'm telling you that Hesach Hadas is not a psul in of itself. It only creates a suffix, a possibility that may become tamei. Now, if I have chatas ha'of that may become tamei, so we're stuck. You can't eat, a kohen can't eat it because it's possibly tamei. But you can also not burn it because it's possibly tahor. So Rav Yochanan says, you ask me, the Tosefta, right, about this Tosefta, for me, it makes perfect sense. But for you, Reish Lakish, the Tosefta makes no sense. Because what disqualification are we talking about over here? Presumably, we're talking about the disqualification of Hesach Hadas. Now for you, that's a psul in of itself. Why do I need Ibert Surah? Why am I putting it away for tomorrow morning in order to burn it? For you, Reish Lakish, aren't you allowed to burn it right now? So, okay, it's a strong question. Elai Amar, we're reading the question inside the Gemara. Elai Amar Psula Guf Lamali Ibert Surah Vatanan. Don't you know the Mishnah? And it's a brisa. But anyway, Zaklal, we have the following rules. We are now on the top of the Amud Beis. Kol she Psula Begufa Yisarf Miad. Bedam of Abalim Tu Abart Surasam Yosem Lebeis Asreifa. If you have a psul in the guf of the carbon, so then you're allowed to burn it immediately. And if the psul is something external. Let's say something happened to the blood of the carbon, which means that the carbon itself is still qualified, but something happened with the blood. The blood spilled, or let's say something happened to the owner. The owner becomes tamei. So there, because now the psul is not within the carbon itself, so although the carbon cannot be offered and cannot be eaten, but because it's an external psul, so what must you do with the carbon? Allow it to go through the Ibrit Sura. Leave it overnight till tomorrow morning, where now it's disqualified through the psul of Lina. Then and only then are you allowed to burn it. So now again, let's just reiterate. Rav Yochan is asking Reish Lakish, for you who are of the opinion that Hetzach Hadas is a psul agof, so question, why is that Tosefta that we just cited on the bottom of the previous Amud, why is that Tosefta saying that it has to undergo Ibrit Sura? It shouldn't have to undergo Ibrit Sura. According to you, you're allowed to burn it right away. So Amalei Haitana Tana de Be'Rava Baravuhu, Damar Fila Pigleton Ibrit Sura. So Reish Lakish gives a really technical answer and response. I'll tell you that the author of that Braisa subscribes to the opinion of Rava Baravua, right? Debe Rava Baravua is of the position that even if a carbon is disqualified through pigle, which is a psul haguf, nevertheless it still needs Ibrit Sura. Everything needs Ibrit Sura before it's being burnt, even those carbonates that have a psul haguf. Okay, very technical answer. Eitzvei, the Gemara challenges once again. Another challenge from Rav Yochan to Reish Lakish. Nitma, Osha Nifsal, Habasar, Osha Yatza Chutz Aklayim. So if I have a carbon that either becomes tameh or becomes disqualified or goes through the disqualification of yotzei, where it's taken out of the azara, so Rabbi Eliezer Omer Yizrok, so Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that what you're supposed to do is be zorek, is sprinkle the blood, and Rabbi Yeshua Omer Lo Yizrok, and Rabbi Yeshua is of the opinion they cannot sprinkle the blood. So this has to do with the carbon Pesach. And what happens if I have no carbon Pesach to actually eat? So we're going to discuss this all later on in our Masechta. This machlok between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua in terms of can I sprinkle the blood of a carbon if I have none of the basar to actually eat? Now Rabbi Yoshua says that if you do the zrika, meaning if he asked Rabbi Yoshua, should I do it? Rabbi Yoshua will say no. But post facto, b'dieved, if you did the zrika, it would work. The zrika would work. So my nifsal. Now, in order to understand the question that Rav Yochanan is asking Reish Lakish, let's put together a couple of pieces of information. One, in the brisa, what happened to the meat? Three possible things happened to the basar of this carbon. Either it becomes tameh or it becomes nifsal, right? That's a vague term that's ambiguous. Or it was taken outside of the azara. So scenarios one and three are very clear. Nitma, we know exactly what that is, and Yatzach Chutz L'Klayim, we know exactly what that is. But Nifsal, what does that mean? So here we're going to make an assumption. My Nifsal la b'Hesach Hadas. So it must be that there was this Hesach Hadas. Attention was turned away from this carbon. Fine. Now, Iyamar b'Shlam ha'psulei toma have ha'inu d'mishkach ala d'meratzei tzitz. So Rav Yochanan says, look, let's go with my line of thinking. What's Hesach Hadas? What's the psul of Hesach Hadas? The possibility of tuma. Okay, if that's true, so then I totally understand, because what did the Brisa say? That b'di'evid, post facto, if you're zorik the dam on this meat, where the psul was a psul of Hesach Hadas, which according to Rav Yochanan is suffik tuma, so then you understand. Meaning that tzitz is going to be meratze. Now, we've gone over this point a number of times, and we're gonna discuss it in this Masechta later on as well, in much greater detail. But for our purposes right now, suffice to say that the tzitz is going to provide ritzui, it will allow a carbon to be pushed through, but only if the disqualification under discussion is tuma. El iamar psola gov have amai hurtza. So, but according to you, Reish Lakish, who say that that the Hesach Hadas Psul is a disqualification in of itself, totally independent of Tuma. So then how does the Tzitz work over here? The Tzitz only creates a Ritzui for the Psul of Tuma. So my Nifsal B'tul Yom. So the Gemara says, okay, so what Reish Lakish will tell you is that, look, in the Braisa that we just learned together, there is a tremendous ambiguity of what Nifsal is. It doesn't say what it is. So I'm telling you that Nifsal means that it becomes Tame. A T'vul Yom touched the carbon. So the Gemara says, that doesn't really fit in the Braisa. Look at the three scenarios of the Braisa. Nitma, Osha Nifsal, and you're telling me, and Yosef Chutz Klein, and you're telling me that Nifsal means that a Tulyum touched it. If a Tulyum touched it, that's the exact same scenario as Nitma. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, yeah, but what the Bryce over here was entertaining is that there are two types of tumma. A standard tumma, meaning an avatumma touched it, or even if a tefillah touched it. That's what the Bryce means. Okay. When all said and done, that concludes our second answer to the question. We have a Mishnah in Trumos. Mishnah in Trumos says, Shesile Truma Shenitmu Vishaslan Tarim Latami Vasar Malachol. You plant your Truma Tamei into the ground, it grows up from the ground. It no longer is Tamei, it's now Tahara, but you can't eat it. Now, who the you is? So, okay, so, and if it's Tahor, so why can't anyone eat it? So far on the table right now, we offer two Pshatim in the Gemara. One Pshat offered by Rabbah, and a second Pshat offered by Rav Sheshes. Rabbah's Pshat is that it is Asur Lizarim, but a Kohen can eat it. That's the one understanding of the Mishnah. The Gemara is bothered by it, not because that Pshat is incorrect, but the Mishnah has already established that. So it's hard to imagine that this Mishnah over here is just going to be reiterating a point that was already made in the Mishnah and Trumos, and quite frankly, in that very same Perek. A second Pshat that's been put out on the table that by Rav Sheshes is that even the Kohanim cannot eat the Truma even after it's replanted. Why? Because once it becomes Tameh, it becomes puzzled through the Psul of Hesach Hadas. But the Gemara points out that answer only works within the school of thought of Reish Lakish, that Hesach Hadas is an independent Psul having nothing to do with Tuma. According to Rav Yochanan, Hesach Hadas just simply means that it's a Suffolk Tuma, and if that's your whole issue, and you plant it in the ground and it comes up again, so it comes out now Tuma free. So according to Rav Yochanan, so the Kohanim should be able to eat it. Okay, so that pshat only is going to work according to Reish Lakish, not according to Rav Yochanan. And now, as we approach the end of today's daf, so we're now going to offer our third pshat in that Mishnah in Trumos. So Kisalak Ravin Amr Lishmaita Kamen to Rav Yirmiyah. So Ravin says the following in the name of Rav Yirmiyah, the Amar. So Rav Yirmiyah first prefaced his pshat in the Mishnah in Trumos with a comment. Comment that comes up a number of times throughout Shas, so you can see on the side of the Gemara. Yuma Zvach Menachos, and right here in Psachim. And this comment of Rav Yirmiyah was about the yeshivas in Bavel. And it was not a complimentary comment at all. The Amar Bavlai Tiv Shai Mishim Diyasri Ba'ar Techashicha. Amris and Shmait is the Mechashche. So the Bavlai Tiv Shai. Now, right, I can translate it literally, but it's really, it's really caustic. It's a sharp comment. If you know what it means, great. But basically, he was not favorable about the yeshivas in Bavel. And he said that they live in these dark places, and they say dark things. They're not enlightened, right? They simply don't have a clear picture of the Torah. Right? This comment of Rav Yirmiyah prompts a lot of discussion, because Rav Yirmiyah over here, and it's tremendous irony, by the way, that we're reading this comment of Rav Yirmiyah in the Talmud Bavli. Okay, but... The Amorim, we've seen this time and again, right? The truth doesn't bother them at all, right? They're honest. They're super honest. So if Rav Yirmiyah had a comment like that, the Amorim and Bavel are going to record that comment, even though obviously it doesn't speak well about them. So anyway, this is a really large discussion. I'm just going to scratch the surface, and that is that the Rav Yirmiyah, who clearly showed displeasure with the Torah that was learned out in Bavel, and said that, look, we have much better clarity of the Torah here in Eretz Yisrael. So meanwhile, there are two Talmuds that are written on the Mishnayos. There's a Talmud Yerushalmi and Talmud Bavli, right? We're learning right now Talmud Bavli, but there's also Talmud Yerushalmi, which reflects the Torah that was learned in Eretz Yisrael regarding the Mishnayos. So how is it that Rav Yirmiyah looks so unfavorably on the yeshivas in Bavel? And meanwhile, history has shown now that the Talmud Bavli is the accepted Torah on the Mishnayos, right? Meaning the back and forth in the yeshivas of how to understand the Mishnayos. So we, Klal Yisrael, have now for the last 1,500 years plus, 1,800 years, have now favored the Talmud Bavli and not the Talmud Yerushalmi, despite this comment. So the main source on this topic is that of a Ritva. I think the Ritva's in Yuma. Okay, and please double check me. Make sure I'm right about it. I'll double check as well. But I think the Ritva's in Yuma when the Gemara over there quotes this. And the Ritva quotes the following in the name of the Rambam, and that is that a lot of this is a generational issue, meaning the Tkufa of the Amoraim went on for some time after the Mishnah was edited by Rabbi Yehuda Anasi about the end of the second century. So then for three centuries, so you had the yeshivas of the Amoraim, Yeshiva in Bavel, Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, in the north of Eretz Yisrael. And so in the earlier years, so this is the Ritva according to the Rambam. In the earlier years, so there was a clear superiority of the yeshivas of Eretz Yisrael over that of Bavel. And then as you move to the end of that Tkufa, as we now approach the end of the period of the Amoraim, circa 5th century, 6th century, so then, right, the tide turned, and the yeshivas of Bavel showed clear superiority. That's the that's how the Rambam understands it in terms of why it is that it's been a unanimous decision by the Rishonim, by history. History has shown that we clearly favor the Bavli over that of the Yerushalmi. Okay, anyway, so back to our Gemara. We are now starting the third answer. Lo shmiya luchu had Rabbi Shimon Malakish meshmei de Rav Oshia. So consider the following. Do you not remember what was taught by Reish Lakish in the name of Rav Oshia? Mei hachag shenitmeu. So let's say you have the waters on Sukkot. Now the waters on Sukkot are going to be drawn and poured onto the Mizbech. This is what's called Nisach HaMayim. And it becomes Tamei. Now if it becomes Tamei, how about drawing more water? So Rashi over here writes that we're talking about on Shabbos. And drawing more water on Shabbos is going to be problematic. See the Rashi for a bit of a detailed discussion of why it is that we can't just simply draw more water. Okay, so it's not an option. So what do we do? So by water that becomes Tamei, so you actually have a way of being Metaret. It's called Hashaka, right? This is not true by any other food or liquid, right? Any other food or liquid that becomes Tamei, that's it. Game over. Although that's funny because in today's daf, we just learned that you can plant in the ground and have it regrow, but that growth is like a new entity. However, when it comes to water, so water that's tamei can become tahor by putting the water in the mikvah, a process of hashaka. What you're going to do is you're going to take the water that's tamei in a bowl, put that bowl in, submerge it so that the waters in the bowl are kissing the water of the mikvah, and in doing so now, that is hashaka. That's going to be matar the water. Rashi says a number of places that the way that hashaka works actually is the same way of zriya. It's like you're replanting the water in the ground, right? Rashi understands this, that it operates actually through the same principles of zriya. Okay, so far so good. So mei achag shenitmu hishikan v'achakach hikdishem taoran. So if you do hashaka first and then afterwards, your makdish it, perfect. Meaning, now we could use the water for nisach hamayim. However, yikdisham v'achar kach yishikan tamein. However, if you're makdish it first, and then afterwards you try to do hashaka, the hashaka doesn't work. Now, why not? So, michti, zriya ninu. It's so funny. I said it's Rashi. Okay, I'd like to just for a moment take it back. It's the Gemara. Okay, all right, fine. Anyway, the Gemara says that Hashaka operates through Zriya. Okay, so the Gemara says, so if Hashaka operates through Zriya, so Mali Hishikan V'Achakach Hikdisha, Mali Hikdisha V'Achakach Hishikan. So what difference does it make? Meaning if putting the water putting the tummy water into another body of water, into a mikvah water, in order to do this process of Hashaka, if that's planting it in the ground, so then question. If you're planting something in the ground, so what comes out now is panim chadashos, it's a totally new entity. What difference does it make whether first you did hashaka, then you were makdashit, or you were makdashit, then you did hashaka? It shouldn't matter. So what do you see from all this? Ama, inzriya lehekdesh, hachanami, inzriya lechuma. Okay, so what you see from all this is the following. We have a principle, and that is that although when you plant something and what grows now is a totally new entity, but that's not going to work for Hekdesh, and similarly over here, it's not going to work for Truma. Now, it only begs the question, why doesn't it work for Hekdesh? Why doesn't it work for Truma? And the answer is, and Rashi says it over here very clearly, Male Asu. It's a Chumrah that the Chachamim legislated and imposed on Hekdesh and Truma that despite the fact that fundamentally when you plant it and it grows new, it's panim chadashos, but for chumras of hektesh, so therefore, once it's hektesh and you plant in the ground, what grows up again is still going to be hektesh. And basically what the chachamim did is that they blocked the zriya process, right? This is now the chachamim in their method of legislation. So basically what they did is they created a blocker, if you will, right? A zriya blocker. So that even though you physically did the act of zriya, but the chachamim blocked the efficacy of zriya. Okay, and so this is now going to be our third approach, the one that is offered by Rav Yirmiyah, quoting this halacha of Rav Oshia regarding the me'achag, that if I have the me'achag, that if it becomes tamei, I can do hashaka, which is really zriya, and it's going to become tahor, but only that's only under the circumstance where I wasn't makdish it. But once you're makdish it, so then zriya won't work. And this again is a chumrah that was imposed by the chachamim. And the Gemara discusses this just a little bit more. Yosef Rav Dimi. And the kamar lahashmaita amar le abayi gdishim bekli kamar. Ava bepe lo avad rabbanim mala. Odilma bepe nami avad rabbanim mala. So now in this discussion, where this chumrah of zriya blockage that's done by the chachamim, is that when it receives the full kedushas kli, or even if you're makdish bepe. And we know that once you take something in the base of Mikdash and put it into a kli, it's imbued with Kedusha Saguf. And therefore it is fully actualized in Kedusha. So there I understand the Chachamim made this Chumra of Zriya blockage and Hashaka blockage. But what if the Kedusha was only Kedusha's Pat? What would you say there? Did the Chachamim impose the Chumra under those circumstances? Amrle Zulo Shemati Kayotse Bo Shemati. He says, I'm not sure. Or better yet, I didn't hear. But I heard something similar. The Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Yochanan, Anavim Shenitmu Darkam V'Achak Yechitishim Taurim. If let's say the grapes become Tame, and I press the grapes, and Rashi says, remember, this is Rav Yochanan from yesterday's daf, the juice in a grape, according to Rav Yochanan, is compartmentalized. And therefore, even though the grape itself is Tame, the juice inside is still Taur, and there is a method of extracting the juice so that even though the grape is Tame, the juice that comes out is Tahor. So let's say you squeeze the juice out and then you're makdish it, perfect. However, if you were makdish it first and then afterwards you squeeze the juice out, so it's tamei. Now we're assuming right now that the grapes have undergone kedusha sapeh and not kedusha saguf, and yet there was blockage that was done in this circumstance. So Amar Rav Yosef Anavim Kamar Hacha Banavim Shel Truma Askina Dikdushas Pedidu Kikdushas Kli Damya Av Ahani Debai Kli Bepe Lo Avad Rabbanim Maila. The Gemara says that you misunderstood. When we're talking about these grapes that became Tamei, they weren't grapes that were being used for the Beis Hamikdash, but rather it's Truma. And when you're Maktish Truma, that is equivalent to taking the grapes of the Beis HaMikdash and putting it into a Kli. Why? Because by Truma, that's it. You've maxed out in Kedusha. It just simply designated as Truma is the ultimate Kedusha that one can give to the grapes. So the Gemara says over here, this is analogous to taking grapes of the Beis HaMikdash and putting it into a Kli. Okay. So at this point in time, right, a really detailed question within this chumrah of the chachamim, that once you're makdish something, so and you try to do zriya, you try to do hashaka, the chachamim blocked it. Is that limited to only kedushas aguf? What about kedusha bepeh? The Gemara leaves that question unresolved. Darken v'afilo tuva. The Gemara over here revisits what we learned yesterday, and that is. And then if I have my grapes which are tamei, I'm squeezing the liquid out of them. So according to Rav Yochanan, that would work. What about the idea that that once you squeeze the juice out, the grapes now making contact with the juice as it comes out, isn't it going to be metame? So we saw this yesterday. We get to review it again today.
So
So what you're gonna do is that you're gonna squeeze them out less than a kibetza, so that there is not gonna be transmission of tumah, because as we established yesterday, right, and we say time and again throughout Shas, when it comes to a food only becomes a conductor of tumah only when the volume of the food is that of a kibetza. The grapes under our discussion over here is where you took grapes less than that of a kibetza. Ibai Sam, the Gemara says, or perhaps over here, achanami pachos pachos mi kibetza. So the Gemara says, okay, that's what we're discussing over here, meaning just take that chiddush that we learned yesterday and apply it over here. Ibai Sam, asam denagola berishon, davalu inusheni, hacha denaga bishene, davalu shlishi. So the Gemara says, or maybe over here, the grapes that become tame, so the grapes under discussion over here are a sheni, and now, right, these grapes are not yet truma, meaning they're chulin, and since these grapes are a sheni, so they can't transmit the tumah over to the liquid, because the liquid would then become a shlishi, but by chulin, there is no shlishi by chulin. That could be our discussion over here, and that's why there's no transmission of tumah. Okay, we're going to stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from the words Amarav in the bottom of the Amud, and we are almost done with a really long tangent here in Pesachim. The entire day today was dedicated to a tangent of Truma and Tuma, and it has to do with the fact that the Mishnah a couple days ago talked about eating Chametz, which also was Truma on Pesach. Anyway, two big topics that we discussed today. Well, one small topic and one big topic. We continue our discussion from yesterday in terms of whether or not we're worried about Takala, meaning that if I have toasted grains of Truma, which are Tame, and obviously the Kohen can't eat it, but can he use it for fuel? So machlokas amarayim between Rav Huna and Rav Yochanan on the bottom of yesterday's Amud Beis. So Rav Huna says that they can, the Kohen can, and he's not worried about the color. Rav Yochanan says, no. Let me say it correctly. Rav Huna says that you can't, because we're worried about takala, meaning once the toasted grains are going into that fire, so the Kohanim are going to look at it and, you know, and hunger is going to take over, and he's going to just simply pick it up and eat it, having forgotten that it was truma tameya. And Rav Yochanan says, I'm not worried about that. We're not, the Kohen's not going to do that. So the Gemara's question for Rav Yochanan, why aren't we worried about that? And the answer is because what you did is you boiled up the kernels beforehand, rendering them disgusting, and that's why you're not worried about takala. Right? I didn't mention this in the daf today, but Rav Huna obviously does not feel that this method is going to be valid. Rashi addresses that on the top of the Amud Aleph. Okay, anyway, I didn't say over the Rashi. Okay, our big topic of today that we covered was a Mishnah in Trumos, where the students of Rabbah were learning Mishnayos and Trumos in the yeshiva, and they come out, and a lengthy discussion. I say lengthy, I mean really covering the entirety of today's daf, in terms of how do you understand this Mishnah? It's a Mishnah in Trumos, 9th Perek, 7th Mishnah, where the Mishnah in Trumos says something that's confounding. You take Truma that's Tameh, you put it into the ground, you plant it into the ground, the new growth is tahor, but you can't eat it. And the Mishnah over here does not say who the you is. So really, there are two points to this Mishnah that demand explanation. One is that if the truma tameya plant in the ground comes out being tahor, so why can't you eat it? And number two, when the Mishnah says you can't eat it, who is the Mishnah making reference to? Okay, so that's the basic question of that Mishnah. The Mishnah really demands an explanation. And over the course of today's daf, three explanations that were given. And let's say it over clearly, succinctly. Number one was Rabbah. Rabbah says that when the Mishnah says it's usher, it means a non-Kohen cannot eat it. A Kohen is allowed to eat it. Okay, that's pshat number one. The difficulty is the redundancy in the Mishnayos over there, because other Mishnayos make that point extraordinarily clear. Hard to imagine that that's all the Mishnah is coming to teach us. Number two, a pshat that's offered by Rav Sheshes, is that the when it grows anew, it's tahor, but you can't eat it. Why can't you eat it? Because it has undergone another psul, otherwise known as the psul of Hesach Hadas, which according to Reish Lakish is a psul bifnei atzmo. But the Gemara notes, however, that this answer only works for Reish Lakish, not for Rav Yochanan. And finally, the third answer, which is offered by Rav Yirmia, with a little bit of a preamble regarding Rav Yirmia's feelings about the Babylonian yeshivas. But Rav Yirmia says that the issue over here is that once something is hekdesh, the chachamim blocked the process of zriya. We saw that by Meachag, and we see that also over here as well regarding truma, that basically the Chachamim put in a Zriya blocker in terms of Hekdesh, or in this case Truma, and it's Mala Asur. The Chachamim did that as a Chumrah. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with the last lines.